Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. What a Ride is the show for you, the radio show if you like to swim, bike or run, or anything in the world of sport that tickles your fancy, is brought to you by Australian Broadcasting Media and Radio Sydney. On the line with me now is my partner in crime, Aaron S. Lee. Aaron, how are you doing, mate?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me on. Man, what a great... I'm still buzzing over the weekend that was the start of the cycling season, 2016, with the Australian Road Nationals, men's and women's, and under-23s, and of course, across the Tasman, over in New Zealand, a bit of the same. Mate, what a great weekend it was in cycling.
It certainly was, Aaron. I mean, you know, like, obviously the summer of cycling started with the Bay Criterium Series in Victoria, but then that really kicked up a gear, didn't it, with the national championships in both sides of the Tasman. I was down there at Ballarat and Buninyong for the Aussie titles, and there was some absolutely fantastic racing. There was some great weather, and I know over there in New Zealand they had some very interesting results. It really shows that down here at this southeastern pocket of the world, there's a lot happening. And we're going to talk about all that. And also, speaking of the southeastern pocket of the world, we've got the Two Down Under just about to start as well. And we will be talking at the back end of the program about that. So this show is going to start strong, it's going to finish strong, and it's going to be pretty exciting, eh?
Absolutely. Hey, and I want to find out, when you were down in Ballarat, did you go to Burrumbeet?
Well, I didn't go to Burrumbeet because I've left my heart in Burrumbeet, you know, as we all know. And but it's interesting, we were talking about Burrumbeet because, as you know, Aaron, a couple of years back we went there, contrary to what the taxi driver said, that no one goes to Burrumbeet.
You know, of course, this story would never translate well to radio, but I think we should somewhat tell it anyway. The funny thing was, it was the time trial, and if I'm not mistaken, the time trial was first that year. It was before the criterium. Now they've got the criterium the past 2 years ahead of the time trials. But we were running late, I believe, and we didn't have a car. But anyway, I remember we were running late, and we were scouring the metropolis downtown of Ballarat, looking for a taxi, and we had probably gone about 2 or 3 blocks in every single direction. And of course, that doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're taking, there are 4 directions. That's quite a lot of coverage when you're running behind. And it was a hot day, a hot summer's day, obviously. And we finally ran across a taxi driver sitting outside a store about a block and a half up on the other side of the road.
Yes, that's right. And he was saying that no one goes to Burrumbeet. And
No one does. And I gotta say, this is probably gonna get us in trouble, but there was a lady there. Of course, as urban legend grows, I think the lady was, she had 2 or 3 kids with her, 4 or 5 bags of groceries. I think even by now she may have even been pregnant.
You're going to dangerous territory here at the moment, but I can just picture the story.
It's a story that needs telling. And I remember it was coming down to her getting a ride or us getting a ride. And we were already in the car. And we just acted as though we were just oblivious to the English language. Because we were not leaving the back seat of that car. Now, listen, folks, for you listening at home, in any other circumstances, we would have gladly have stepped out of that car.
Oh, for sure. But the clock was ticking.
And we were first.
Yeah, we were first. There was no untoward tactics to get into the car first. And mind you, we were pretty keen to get out of the taxi, weren't we, when we arrived. And interestingly, despite the cab driver's protest that no one goes to Burrumbeet, and obviously that day a lot of people were, it's interesting to note that ever since, the Nationals have never gone back to Burrumbeet. So I still picture that cab driver waiting now. He's probably waiting for that annual ride to Burrumbeet that he'll never get again.
It was the year, actually, that Roman Dennis was swept off his bike.
Yeah, well, that's a good little segue, because let's give all our listeners a chance to sort of absorb that story, and let's take a break. We're going to listen to one of your fine selections of music, but mentioning Roman Dennis, we're going to be speaking about him later in the show, but after this quick break, a little bit of music, we're going to start talking national championships, our national championship review. You're listening to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. And Aaron Essley. That's a nice bit of music to start the show off. Aaron, well done, mate. You've always got a good taste, and it's one of the parts I like about this show is not knowing what music you're going to choose. So, chapeau, mate, chapeau. But as I said, we're going to talk about the Australian Road Championships, and they were held just last weekend from January 6th to January 10. And the championships we had the Criterium Championships, we had the Time Trial Championships, and then the week was capped off with the Road Racing Championships. And like I said, what a week it was. Aaron, on this first segment, let's just talk about the women first. We'll talk about the men later in the show. The down in Ballarat, where you had the women's Criterium, and you had the under-23 Criterium in the same race. There was an astonishing result. Sophie Mackay, who came from nowhere, and she out-sprinted Lizzie Williams from Orica AIS. But Sophie is an ex-teammate of Lizzie's on a couple of years ago, and Sophie, her last win, I think it was the 2013 New South Wales Road Championship. So there you go, it's one of those stories of someone who just is a workhorse and has managed to sort of finally get a brilliant result. That set the tone for the championships for some really interesting results.
You're spot on there, Rube. And to beat Lizzie Williams with all the support that she had riding for her on the day, and obviously with her talent and skill set, that's a big accomplishment for Sophie, for sure.
Yeah, certainly. And I mean, the interesting thing, like Orica AIS, they also had Sarah Roy up there, and there was a breakaway, and then Sarah Roy managed to bridge across. And Lizzie was going to try and set up Sarah for the sprint, but I guess that effort by Sarah to make it across, in crit racing, you only have so many efforts in you, and it came towards the back end of the race with five laps to go, and I just think that would have taken the stung out of Sarah's sprint. And obviously at that point Lizzie's thinking she's got to do the job, but Sophie came through with the goods, and it was a great result. But then we got into the time trials a couple of days over later at Buninyong, and that was an interesting sort of turnabout as well. And we saw Katrin Garfoot, the German-born Aussie on Orica IS. She had a great result, which is she was so happy about that. And and then Tiff Cromwell got in for a bronze medal, which was not a surprising result. It was just a good strength show of form by her, and it was her best ever result in the time trial. And I forgot to say, second place. Second place went.
Sharon Gillow.
You bailed me out there, didn't you? Thank you.
Well, no. It's hard to forget Sharon Gillow. She was going in as the reigning four-time women's time trial champion. She's an amazing talent on a time trial bike, and she's really owned that course over the years. And, I talked to her just briefly over Facebook Messenger the next day, and she basically said, look, she's still very happy with the result and quite happy with her form.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, you know, if she had got that fifth win, that would have been a record. But that's why records are hard to break, isn't it? They're not always broken. And, I think it was reflective of the standard of that time trial amongst the women who competed. And, obviously for Garfoot, it was an incredible result for her. She, got fourth at the Commonwealth Games in the time trial. But now, interestingly, after that, she said she's really focused on Rio. Now she wants that time trial spot, and she said the goal is to go to Rio, not just to go to Rio and to participate. She wants to win at Rio. So high ambitions, but you've got to tilt the lid to people who've got high ambitions, because when they achieve them, they've justified their position that they're going for, it's great to see people have, some people may say, lofty ambitions, but high ambitions are great.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And of course, turning our attentions to the men, obviously you just can't.
Oh, the men abandoned the segment. Then we talk about that's another segment.
Apologies, I jumped the gun on that one.
This is a male-free zone on this segment.
What are we doing on it?
The subject content is a male-free zone.
I got you.
So we're going to talk about the women's road race now. Women's road race.
Yeah, absolutely.
Amanda Spratt, last time, she won the championship in 2:12 in a solo break. This time she managed to win it in a two-up sprint, and she really produced the goods, and that was a great result, and she's obviously got her eyes on the Olympic for a spot in the road team. But Amanda Spratt, another person who's, done a lot of work for other riders, and but she certainly proved that when she puts her hand up for the win, she's got the goods.
And Rip, talk to me a little bit about it, because that race, I wasn't down there this year, but that's a tough course. That road race course there in Buninyong, that's got to be one of the toughest national courses in the world.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, the climb there, they do, it's 10.2 kilometres, and the women's race, they do 10 laps of that. And the Buninyong Hill, as it goes out from the start line up along the hill, it goes for about, I'd say a good kilometre, then it turns left, and then it dips a little bit, then it peaks up again. And it's you can imagine the grind of the race as it continues on and on. And it takes a heavy toll on the field, and it's probably no surprise that you get small fields left, come the finale. So you've really got to have a strong rider to win that. And somebody, I think, experience on that circuit certainly helps. It's interesting that there's always debate every year, but maybe we can talk about that later in the show, but about whether the course should move around or not. But it's certainly, I think it's a fabulous course, and it does test everything. And you know what, we've seen in the past, strong sprinters who can get around on those hills do have a fair crack at the title. So I think it's a great place to stay. You go on.
Also, Rube, when we look at Amanda's victory, last weekend, you can't help but look to see who she won over and who she shared that podium with. There was a lot of talent on that podium right below her. We're talking Ruth Corsett, who is just I love Ruth because she's a triathlete turned mountain biker turned road cyclist, and she still dabbles in both triathlon and mountain bike races in the off season around her home in far north Queensland. She was a 2010 champion. She's won the NRS since coming back from serving her time as a pro in Europe and kind of settled on family. I believe she has two girls, I believe. And so it's just great to see her still so high in the mix. And, of course, Rachel Nayland, who finished second last year. And then, obviously she's finished on the world stage, UCI Road Worlds, 2012, Rube?
Yeah.
She was a silver medalist there as well. So what a lot of talent
on
that podium for the women.
Yes, certainly. I mean, it's actually, I forgot to mention that, obviously Ruth was in the two rider break with Amanda. You know, they got away on that last hill. They from a breakaway that they were already in of about five or six riders. So, and you know, Amanda went early in the sprint because she was a bit wary about Ruth having it on her in a tight sprint. But it was great. It was a great ride there by Orica AIS. You know, they had, you know, a girl in the initial breakaway of the day, and they had every group covered throughout the whole event. And then you know, obviously when Ruth and Amanda are up for the finale there, you know, good on Rachel for nailing to she was in the group behind. She didn't do anything untoward to threaten the breakaway from staying away, and then she saved her cards for that sprint. And it was an emotional moment for Rachel as well, because her father Anthony passed away with cancer back in August, and she spoke to me before the race about how much it meant to her that you know, she was, you know, thinking of him all the time, obviously, but you could see that sense of the emotion afterwards. She understandably became very teary-eyed, and she dedicated her bronze medal win to her father. But just speaking of that, you know, obviously we spoke to Amanda Spratt after the race, and let's have a listen to see hear what Amanda had to say. But first, we have another bit of music we'll listen to, and then we'll come back and listen to Amanda Spratt, the Australian Women's Road Race Championship.
Swastikas in my head, burns for everyone.
Aaron Lee, you still got it. Your taste in music, always astounding me. You're listening to Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee on What a Ride. We're talking about the Australian Road Championships that were held from January 6th to January 10. And we've just been talking about the women's events, the fantastic results there. In the last segment, we're just talking about Amanda Spratt, who won the Women's Elite Road Race Championship race. And as we said, we're going to have a listen to hear what Amanda had to say on the finish line in Buninyong. Here she is talking to a group of media, including myself. I was there, and let's just hear what she had to say about her great victory.
Last time you won the title was in 2012. You've done it again in the Olympic year. How does this one compare to the first one?
The first one was probably a little bit more unexpected. This one I came in really knowing that my form was really good. I think certainly through the Bay Crits I could feel that, although I've certainly kept a really low profile heading into the race, which was fine for me. But coming to the race, we obviously had a good numerical advantage, and I think the thing was we were able to really use it this year. Having Sarah Roy out there in that early break was great for us. It was a great situation, and it meant we could sort of not panic, sit in there, relax, and sort of, I guess, have the other teams wondering what we were going to do. And once we started making those moves, we really meant business. And, yeah, I mean, getting across to Sarah was great. She was cramping. She was absolutely done, but she just said, what can I do? What do I do? She just gave me every last bit of energy she had, and then I knew that it was up to me to finish it off.
In the closing stages, were you communicating to the team that you were confident in your sprinting ability at the end, and was there any uncertainty over the radio as to whether others should go across to you, or how did you deal with that?
Well, I think we didn't have too much communication in the final there once I was away. I mean, I spoke to Sarah and told her that I was confident that I could finish it off for the team, so she certainly knew that, and I'm sure she was able to communicate with that the team once they did catch her. I mean, I know Ruth's actually a strong sprinter, so I had to be really, really smart in the way that I won that sprint in the end. I mean, it was just numerical advantage. I knew that I had green edge riders behind me if it did come back together, so I could kind of play that card a little bit. But I was feeling really strong out there, and I know in a really hard, tough race, I can actually sprint pretty well at the end.
You went pretty early, I mean, can you just talk us about how do you put, what energy output are you putting, putting out? Are you going absolutely at the limit at the start? Because you know you're going to have to maintain it right to the finish.
Yeah, no, I was trying to be patient, and I think I still went with about 300 to go. It's one of those finish straights. You can see the finish from so far out, and you know it's an Australian championship, and yeah, I think I got a little bit excited, but I knew for me I probably had to make it a bit of a longer sprint. Ruth is quite punchy, so that was my aim, was to try and make it a bit more of a drag race, and I could just keep getting faster and faster, and I think getting the jump on her is what allowed me to win the sprint. Yeah.
What are your thoughts? This has already been mentioned, you've done this in an Olympic year again. Your thoughts on the big goal this year?
Yeah, certainly a really great way to start the year. I mean, the last couple of seasons I've been a bit more up and down, but I've had a really solid block of training in my off-season, and certainly the Olympics is the really big goal, and to start it off with the national title is really, really important and just puts me right there, at the forefront of the peloton, and this is how I want to start winning, and I want to continue winning once I get to Europe as well.
And also significant that the two other Orica IIS girls who get third and fourth, Kat's obviously the big time trial contender, and Rachel would also have strong claims on the Rio course.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be a super hard course from what we hear, and I think Australian women's cycling is in a really strong position. We finished last season with our highest ranking that we've had in a number of years. I think we were fourth, which allows us four riders in Rio, so we really want to keep that momentum going heading into this and try to get that fourth rider there, because it will make a big advantage. But certainly it's looking pretty exciting when you've got so many riders kind of in contention there. Yeah.
Just looking ahead to the year, which races will you be targeting in Europe? Just personally, and then also for that selection from Rio?
Certainly. I mean, knowing that Rio is a really tough course, some of those hillier races are going to be really important. This year we have the Women's World Tour for the first year, so my big targets will be focused on some of those hillier World Tour races. So we're looking at the Cecilia Trofeo Binder race in third weekend of March, the Flesh Wallonne World Cup, which is in mid-April, and then just overall having good consistency through those other classics, but mainly the hillier one-day races are what I'm targeting. Yeah.
With a view to the Olympics, is it the goal of the team to try and get every single spot? I mean, have you actually sort of spoken about that, as we'd like to?
No, I don't think we haven't really spoken and said that we want all Orica riders there. I mean, we're certainly in a position where we would have to have a number of the top contenders to get there, with a few other riders from different teams. So it's not something where we're saying we want all Orica riders there. But obviously, in a way, it does help that we do have so many contenders. We're all really pushing each other. We're all, you know, it's not not a cat fight or anything. We're all really supportive of each other. In a way, that's just pushing each other to get better as well. Yeah.
Are you going to do the Cadell Evans race?
Yeah, so I have a big January coming up, Tour Down Under next. So I'm pretty happy I get to wear my jersey so soon. And then Cadell's race, yeah, and then I'll head to Europe after that.
Rachel spoke, she was very emotional talking about her dad. Mm. And I understand you walked past Paula and said that one was for Marv.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just sort of a few comments on, you know, obviously Marv's having a rough time and how much it means for the team that you get one for him.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's been a rough, obviously, you know, Rachel's had a bit of pretty emotional time with the passing away of her father just before Worlds last year. Mm. And we got the news from Marv that his father passed away really unexpectedly, and so he couldn't be here for these first races. But, you know, the way our team is, we're like a family, and he's been messaging us throughout the Bake Routes, throughout the Nationals, and, you know, he's always keeping an eye on us. He's always, you know, seeing how it's going, and I know that he, you know, this is one of his favourite races to be here. And
he's very annoying, isn't he?
Get
he just
excited.
Never leaves you alone.
Yeah, he's annoying. He eats his good luck donuts before the start line and gets captured on film, which is still a highlight for me. Yeah, so, I mean, I know he'd be really proud just to see the way the team rode and the way the team is racing at the moment, yeah.
I wonder if you can just speak for a minute about what were the conditions like today, obviously starting at 8 a.m. much earlier than previous years. Did that affect the peloton or...
I don't think so. Maybe just a few people wishing they'd had time to get an extra coffee in or two. Yeah, I was a little bit sleepy this morning, but yeah, I don't really think it affected the race at all. I mean, it is an earlier start for us. We do have to get up earlier, but the flip side is that, you know, we get, you know, the same crowds as the men. We've got the TV time, so it's, you know, a bit of compromise too. I think it's absolutely fantastic that we're going to get that television coverage at 1 p.m. on Channel 9. So, you know, it's a trade-off, and we're more than happy. Yeah.
And what about the crowds?
Yeah, the crowds just every lap kept getting bigger and bigger, and you know, you kind of get, everyone says that this Mount Buninyong circuit is, you know, just like doing a race in Europe on some of those climbs when, you know, you've got the cowbells, you've got the noise and the atmosphere. We really had that, certainly in the last sort of two or three laps. You could, you know, the crowd was going nuts, and yeah, I could hear lots of people cheering for me, which is always motivating.
Did you feel like it was bigger than other years with the Sunday race?
I think so, yeah. I mean, certainly I think the first couple of laps I was a little bit sleepy, but you could notice every lap there were more and more and more spectators. And I mean, the other thing, I had my whole family here too, and the last time my whole family came was in when I won in 2012, so I think I can definitely say they're my good luck charms.
Go and have a good lunch.
Well, that was Amanda Spratt, the newly crowned Australian Women's Elite Road Race Champion for the second time in her career. She's really good to talk to, Spratty. That's how everyone likes to call her. And she's always great with the media. And as you heard there, she's got a lot of enthusiasm. And we probably could have stood there for a lot longer, but it was getting hot down in Buninyong. Aaron, how did you feel about that, mate? You know, you've spoken to Amanda Spratt before.
Yeah, look, I'm so proud of the job that she was able to do over the weekend. And again, as we mentioned earlier, to do it in such an impressive group of riders, the field was loaded, and it really does. You know, we've talked about this over the last few years, how the elite men's field always looks like a world tour caliber. You know, in other words, the podium you can find anywhere on any race throughout the season. The women's field is exactly the same in that the talent has just continues to grow. And one person we didn't make the podium is a two-time champion Gracie Elvin. So there, we mentioned Tiffany Cromwell earlier, who was riding so strongly in the individual time trial, who's always a threat. The women's field is deep, and it's quite impressive, and it's got me very excited about what's to come for 2016.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, they're going to be racing, the women are going to be racing down in their tour during the Two Down Under period. So we're going to hear more of these names in the next couple of weeks and certainly for the rest of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, I just literally right before we went on air here, I had a quick chat with Gracie Elvin, who mentioned how she personally feels really strongly about her form at the moment. She's not going to be racing the Santos Women's Cup at the Tour Down Under this week. She's instead take a little bit of time off, go back to Canberra, do a little bit more training in preparations for a very strong season starting off in Qatar. So, and also want a quick shout out while we're talking about the women and talk about Rush Lee Buchanan, who won the women's elite time trial and the women's road race over in New Zealand over the same weekend. She adds that to a Criterium title she won a month earlier. New Zealand does it just a little bit differently. They don't hold all three at the same time. But what an impressive showing over the last 30 days for the Waikato native.
Yeah, so that's a magnificent performance there, and good call, Aaron, and thanks for the heads up about Gracie's plans as well of not being down there in Adelaide. So, but that's great to hear that she's going to be doing Qatar, and I've been to Qatar before, and I know that they're really, really tough conditions there. So hopefully she's going to be freshened up and really strong to pull out a good performance. Now we're going to...
it's going to be interesting, Ru, because, obviously Orca AIS, they've got a big change coming up for 2016. They're missing one Emma Johansson.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting stuff. Well, we look forward to seeing her performances. Now we're going to have a little bit of a gear shift. We're going to break this male-free zone, and we're going to introduce the men's road racing championships at Ballarat and at Buninyong. Just for the end of this little segment, how about we just start with Aaron, the men's elite Criterium. We mentioned him at the very start of the show before we put the lockdown on the men's content for the last segment. Caleb Ewan, what a great win by Caleb there. He really, there was a lot of pressure on him coming into that championship before, with him having won the Bay Crits series beforehand, 3 out of 4 races. We saw last year on his debut, he wasn't able to do it. Steele von Hoff got the win. This time, Caleb got a superb win, and he was excellently led out by Alex Edmondson. I think that's, people say it's a Criterium, but it shows that Caleb's able to carry the expectations and pressures on him, which we've seen before, but it's always nice to see it reaffirmed.
Well, one of the things that really surprised me coming in, it probably shouldn't have surprised me, but I know that he even addressed this in a quick chat that I had with him maybe a day or two before the race, was that he hadn't raced since the Vuelta. So that's a huge block that he had not raced at all since August, September. And he was unsure just how his performance would be, if he would be a bit too rusty perhaps, but the off season, the rest did him well. He enjoyed a pretty solid off season of gym training with a personal trainer in his home of Monaco, so I think he obviously has shown that the rest did the body good, and that he's ready to go and expects a fantastic season, which what he said is going to really highlight the first half of the season come the Giro d'Italia, where he'd like to pick up a stage or two.
Yeah. Interesting. Although, interesting enough, we saw him in the, and we're going to talk about the men's elite road race a little bit later, but Dan, we're talking about just with Caleb. Obviously, in the men's elite road race, he wasn't on a good day. He was dropped relatively early in the race before all the real action happened near the end. So that might have been a disappointment for him, I'd suggest, because his confidence would have been quite high going into the race. And certainly after his silver medal performance the year before, when Hal Heinrich Hausler won, who was not here this year, he certainly proved the year before that he can get around the tough Buninyong circuit. So I guess, I haven't spoken to him since, but I'd suggest that possibly, he obviously wasn't on a great day. But we can only hope that he's going to recover and show his best again at the Tour Down Under, where I'm sure he'll be amongst the fray in those sprint stages.
Oh, absolutely. Well, again, taking so much time off, he may have been just a bit overcooked after the Criterium.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said, he hadn't raced since the Vuelta, so maybe that sudden, picking up race schedule has been a pretty hard race schedule for him in the last month. So maybe he just sort of, tilted over the edge what he had in the legs at the time. So a day or two rest and hopefully he'll be all the better. Now, Aaron, we're going to take a little break here. Start looking into your record file. We don't have records anymore, do we? LPs?
No.
But go and pick something for us.
I still got 8 tracks, mate.
go and select something for us, mate, and we'll just take a little breather, and we'll go into the feed station, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the Men's Elite time trials and the Men's Elite road race. You're listening to What a Ride with Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom.
7, 6.
Commencing countdown, engines on.
3, 2.
Check ignition and may God's love be with you. This is ground control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade, and the papers want to know.
Listening to What a Ride. I'm Rupert Guinness, and I'm with my partner in crime, Aaron S. Lee. Aaron, nice little choice there of music, but Speaking of nice little choices, there were some nice choice results in the men's elite and under 23 races in the time trial and also at the road race at the Australian Road Championships in Buninyong, Victoria. Aaron, what was the highlight for you, do you think, from all those races?
Oh, I think it's kind of something that you and I were talking about during the commercial break was young Chris Hamilton, the mountain biker turned roadie, who was the under 23 National Criterium champion, but last year and this year he takes the road race again. Mountain biker turned roadie. You and I always love those stories of triathletes or mountain bikers who are able to transfer those skills and obviously cross over and find success at another sport. Well, he's definitely one of those guys and seems to have all the talent in the world, but more importantly, I like him because he's a part of that Andrew Christie Johnston learning tree from that Avanti program that has produced the likes of obviously Richie Port and Nathan Haas, Jack Haig. The list goes on and on. Rube, that was the highlight of my weekend from viewing from afar here in North America. But you were on the ground. What did you like?
Oh, look, I really like, there's a lot that I liked. I mean, but now you're just talking about, you know, crossovers from sports. What about Sean Lake? You know, I mean, you know, he got a bronze medal in the men's elite time trial behind Rowan Dennis. Rowan Dennis won it, who got second last year, and Richie Port, who won it last year, got second. So he was in pretty esteemed company there. And
of course, Sean Lake being a former.
Continue.
Yeah, former rower.
Rower.
Being an old rower yourself, I think, obviously, that you'd be just absolutely thrilled with Sean Lake's performance. And can I say, just 18 months into his cycling career, and the guy is already standing on top of the podium, or I say, should I say, standing on the podium, with two of the best riders in the world, bar none. And what an impressive feat. And again, another ACJ.
Yes. Well, I think more importantly, he's a rower, ex-rower, mate. He's got the engine there. He's going to have to strip off a little bit. That'll come in kilometres trained and kilometres ridden and raced. He's going to strip off. His body still has to change a bit. But a time trial's a time trial. They call it the race of truth.
Absolutely. Sorry, 78 kilos.
Yeah, I mean it's a lot for a bike rider. He's not that far off being a lightweight rower though. 72.5. He could be lightweight again. But anyway, he's committed to a road cycling career now, and he had a good, you know, fantastic ride also in the men's elite road race. Now, just about the time trial though, I thought, you know, obviously Rowan Dennis, Australian Cyclist of the Year last year, his performance was superb. And you know, we mentioned about how he crashed a few years ago in the race, and and he got second last year. So 2 years ago, he crashed out in the race, got hit by 60. He was racing 60 kilometres per hour, got hit by a whirlwind, and he was all grazed up, banged up, and out of the event. Last year, he got beaten by 7 seconds by his new teammate on BMC, Richie Port. And Richie Port got a second. His time was only 2 seconds out of last year's winning time. But Richie said he's come into this year's championships not on the same form as last year. He's having a slow boil towards his peak, hopefully, for the Tour de France in July. But there were two good rides by those two BMC riders. Unfortunately, in the men's road race, you know, Richie sort of overcooked it a bit with some efforts, which saw him not finish. And then Rowan Dennis didn't finish either. He was up there leading towards the end in the group behind Jack Bobridge, who had a fantastic victory, more than 90 kilometres on his own to win that championship. What did you feel about Jack Bobridge's result? Because he's had a topsy-turvy career, but he knows how to pull out the big ones.
Well, I'll tell you, before I mention my feelings on Jack, I want to go back to, and I hate to do this on air where people actually have some sort of point of reference or record of me saying this, but excellent piece on Rowan Dennis in the Sydney Morning Herald last week. I think it was prior to the time trial win, or it might have been after, I can't remember that, apologies, but a great piece on talking about the scars left behind from that race, that crash into the time trial in Burnaby, three years ago. I just want to say that was an amazing read, and for those out there, I'm sure you'll be able to find it. Just visit the Sydney Morning Herald website and look up for Guinness. I'm sure that story will be there. It's worth a read for sure. And also, as far as Richie falling just slightly short to his new teammate, what does that say? I mean, what does that really say about Richie's form when he's on and off, when he's off form, so to speak? So that says a lot about just how talented Richie is, and makes me excited about what's to come, especially come the Tour de France, which he, as we spoke last week's show, has targeted with team co-captain American TJ Van Garderen, which I, as I stated last week, still not sold on that strategy. But as far as Jack goes, a real roller coaster of a year, or really a roller coaster of a career, should we say, for Jack. But man, a magnificent ride, and I think I saw 3 days later his name was still trending on Twitter, but it was showing just how relevant his ride was on Sunday in Buninyong. Wow. And you know, I think SBS had a poll midway through the race, could he hold on to the lead, and I actually think I was one of the few that voted no. there's no way. There was just no way he could hold on to that pace and what he was doing. And lo and behold, he got faster, Rube.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think he's about his second last or third last lap was actually under 15 minutes for the lap, but he did 14:58. But, you know, I don't think you're alone in thinking that he wouldn't make it, because, I mean, the group behind, they obviously underestimated him. They thought he would blow up, and in the end, they ended up realizing that their only hope of catching him would be that he would blow up. When he was in the earlier break, and they had about 10 minutes lead, and then he was down to about 9 minutes when he was on his own. And he was talking about how he really rode an intelligent race as well. It wasn't just a gutsy, strong ride. It was an intelligent ride, because he knew that he would need 9 minutes. He went off alone. He dropped Bernie Bernie Salzberger from Drapac on the 10th of 18 laps of this tough Buninyong circuit. And when he had, 9 minutes, 9.5 minutes, he calculated that if he was to go up the hill on 300 watts and then he would come down it, he said the chase group, they would be just going up the hill as he's coming down, and they would need to produce massive numbers of wattage power to be able to catch him, you know. And so he really calculated it well, but better than just me explain it, because I might have got into a bit of a muddle there. Why don't we have a listen to what Jack Bobridge said, because as with Amanda Spratt, we spoke to Jack on the finish line, and there's nothing better than to hear it from the horse's mouth. So let's just have a little listen now to Jack Bobridge, the Australian Men's Elite Road Race Champion. Jack, with what unfolded today, was that strategy in your mind last night when you went to bed, or even this morning?
Not to be honest. I think what I had in my mind today of a strategy was obviously Green Edge, you know, there's been a big hype around them, and Caleb and Garen's really wanted to win this and Down Under, so and Richie and Rowan, obviously Rowan was in fantastic condition after what he did to us the other day. I was actually going to follow either Garen's or Caleb today. In the back of my mind, I thought Richie and Rowan would probably be a bit too strong for me to try to go with them at the finish, but when I saw that big group go at the start, 20 guys and had a lot of teams represented, I put myself there, and I think just got away with Bernie, and he was humming and hawing whether to stay there or not. And you know, at that point in time, if I was to go back, I've spent too much energy already, so I'm not going to win the bike race anyway. So I got myself into a good rhythm, and I guess the time gap I got, that 9 minutes, was enough time for me to start the descent as they were starting to climb. So it was perfect timing, and I had tower wind on the climb. So as long as I, which I did, I kept the leg strong to the end. Managed to pull.
What were you telling yourself mentally to keep going
today? Obviously, I wanted redemption after Thursday. To be honest, I trained full, probably more than I ever have before for the time trial on Thursday, and it didn't go my way. I just had one of them days when the body just didn't want to work. Everyone has them days. I was pretty annoyed with Thursday, but I guess today was just yeah, redemption for Thursday, and you know, I guess at the end of the day, to win the road race is probably a bit more better than the time trial because I get to wear the jersey more often.
How was the pain? How would you describe it compared to other things you've done? Like we've seen the hour record and stuff on the track. How would you compare what you went through today?
Yeah, well, I just sort of try to start breaking it up into sections. You know, do the climb threshold, and then all the descents was I try to ride 300 or less, so I could always ride threshold on the climb, because I knew to take 9 minutes back on the climb. If I'm riding my threshold, these guys will, you know, most of the bigger guys are heavier than me. They're going to have to do stupid numbers, and you know, they're going to be able to pull back a bit of time, but they're never going to pull back 9 minutes.
How do you feel, mate? Can you put it in layman's terms? I mean, people are calling it one of the most memorable title wins ever. You know, 90 odd k's on your own. Can you put it in the work?
Well, I'm a bit speechless too at the moment. I think it hasn't sunk in yet, really. But yeah, to be honest, I honestly didn't think. Yeah, you know, 90 or 100k solo is it's next level a little bit, I guess. It was, but in saying that, this is the kind of course, like I said, when you do have that 9 minute advantage, guys are still climbing and you're descending. So, and we had tailwind up the climb today, so it's in favour of the guys off the front, you know. So I think that really played into my hands today, and yeah, and I was angry at myself from Thursday's not so good ride. So yeah, it was, and I had Brett Aiken in the car. He was good, you know. He was telling me, and he was keeping me level-headed on the climb, and you know, really, really looking after me.
So just your mindset. Just your mindset. When you go off 90k's from home, do you have full faith you can see that, or are you thinking, let's see what happens here? Or, I've put all my eggs in already. I've got to go. Or can you give us your mindset?
Yeah, I honestly didn't think going that far from home I'd be able to hold on this course. This course is brutal. So. But yeah, I guess the time gaps, it stayed the same, and a few times it even started to go out a bit, and so, you know, probably 4 or 5 laps from home I started to think to myself, you know, shit, I can probably do this if I keep riding smart. And I guess every time up the climb I really watched my power meter and really, and I knew what I could do. And you know, to do 60k an hour down the hill, to do 62, you got to do an extra 60 watts. So it wasn't worthwhile. It was worth putting that extra 60 watts up the hill and holding them off. So yeah, it was a real tactical game for me in terms of really watching that power meter and really watching you know, the effort right to the finish line.
Does it change what you're planning to do to an hour
now? No, not really. I don't think so. You know, all it sort of means now is that I get to wear the Aussie jersey all week, and probably get harassed by you guys even more.
I mean, Jack, surely you must think that you can have a crack at it now, if you did already before.
No, you know, I've started my season, you know, I won't lie, I started my season really early this year. Was aiming for the time trial, so you know, and we had the World Cup on the track in New Zealand, which was early, so I started early, and I wanted to start the season really good for Trek, you know, because they've obviously given me the second chance this year to go back to the World Tour, so I guess this is massive for them and massive for me just to step up. So they've brought a really good team over for Down Under, and yeah, you know, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't going to have a go Down Under next week, and now I've shown that I've got the form to do it, I'll step up and see what I can do.
Jack, just on that last lap, how were you feeling going up there? I mean, were you suffering any cramps or anything? Or maybe were you worried about Cam getting across? I guess you still had 2 or 3 minutes.
Well, I think I still had, like, they were telling me I still had, like, four and a half minutes on the last climb, so I knew he wasn't going to catch me if I was just to ride, you know, 300 watts or more, so. But to be honest, at the last climb, I was absolutely, you know, I won't use the language, but I was absolutely shagged, but I just, it's the last lap of the national titles, you know. If you just get over that, you're going to win, and, you know, so I just buried it. But it was, yeah, it wasn't just that last lap. The last 2 or 3 laps was pretty brutal.
Jack, how did those last couple of laps compare to your last few minutes in the hour record?
To be honest, the hour record was the most effed thing I've ever done to myself in my life. Nothing could hurt any more than an hour. So what I did today was, you know, when it starts to hurt, if you think about the hour, then nothing hurts more than what Howard did.
Jack, what did you make of how Green Edge raced today? Were you surprised by their tactics after how the race played out?
Well, I guess, you know, when you have 8 or 9 minutes and I heard Green Edge were on the front. Green Edge today had a lot of big guys, and if I'm riding 400 watts on the climb, guys that are weighing 10 kilos more than me, it's impossible to ride that up the climb. They're never going to catch me. So they let the race go by letting that big group go early and not having their, you know, one of their selected guys in there. So their tactics today were, I don't think they rode the smartest race they've ever ridden. Sometimes more riders isn't that good.
You clearly did. You wasn't just physically strong, you rode the smartest race too.
Yeah, I looked after myself, you know, in that first group, made sure, you know, I was watching to see what was going to happen, whether they were going to bring it back or not. It was touch and go for a little while, so, I thought I rode a pretty tactical race until I went, even when I was off the front by myself solo, I still rode a really tactical race in terms of riding the climb hard, all the descents, not pedalling, conserving, eating, drinking all day. So, I think it was a good tactical race.
You're listening to What a Ride with Aaron S. Lee and Rupert Guinness. I switched the names around this time for a bit of variety, but it's still the same show, still the same blokes talking, gas-bagging about the Australian Men's Road Race Championship. And we just had a listen to Jack Bobridge, who won the Men's Elite Road Race at Buninyong. It's the second time Jack's won the Australian Championship, and he won it in a similar circumstance, not as long as the breakaway, but he did it with a 30-kilometre solo breakaway in 2:11. After which he also went on to break the world individual pursuit record over 4,000 metres. And as we recall, in last year's Tour Down Under, he won the first stage in a brilliant attack and held on to the lead for a little while. And then after that race, the Tour Down Under, he had an attempt at the world hour record, which he just fell short of breaking. But it was a massive week of performances by Jack Bobridge. When you think about those performances, Aaron, you know, he really is a remarkable athlete on his day.
He's darn sure a gutsy one, isn't he? He's not scared to ride and not scared to attack anything. He's proven that time and time again throughout his career. We know that he has battled some health issues regarding arthritis, debilitating arthritis in the past. I think he's on top of that now. I haven't had a chance to really talk to Jack or see Jack since we saw him in the tunnel after the hour record. And when he was absolutely exhausted and shattered, but still managed to have a smile on his face. I haven't had a chance to speak with him since, but to see him on the podium and see him on TV speaking afterwards, it really made the heart smile a bit. I was glad to see him battle back, and I'll be very interested to see what he'll be able to do in 2016, especially if he still has those Olympic aspirations for Rio with his fellow track team pursuit colleagues.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I know those the Olympics are very much on his radar, and it's going to be interesting to see how he builds up towards that. It's obviously there's not going to be much rest for him after the Nationals because he's going to be at the Tour Down Under, but this time he's going to be racing for his new team, Trek, one of the World Tour teams. He last year rode the Tour Down Under for the UniSA Australia team, but this year is going to be with Trek, and certainly he's got the year off superbly for that team, and they would have been extremely happy with his win. But I think there'll be a lot of expectation and see how he goes in Adelaide at the Tour Down Under, and then it'll be interesting to see how he manages his program, because I think he can have a tendency to be going too hard too often and not sort of keep something in reserve. So I think, though, with the team pursuit commitments ahead, he'll have to sort of, I think those things will be monitored in an Olympic year, and he's got the engine to have in a team pursuit, hasn't he?
One of the things I want to mention before we move on to the next segment is that I mentioned that Rush Lee Buchanan obviously won the Nationals triple over the last month and obviously pulled the double on the individual time trial and the women's the elite women's road race over this past weekend in New Zealand in Napier. Just wanted to mention Jason Christie. young Jason Christie, who former Avanti rider, spent last year with the Avanti Racing team. He is now signed with the Kenyan, was it the Kenyan riders from down under, which is a bit of an amalgamation from last year's Kenyan riders team and the Australian Continental team pro riders down under. He took it to them, won the men's elite men's national road race, and I haven't gotten quite down to the gist of it, but seemed like there was a bit of tension afterwards when speaking with him about not being re-signed with Avanti, and I'm not sure all the details on that yet, but rest assured we'll be on top of it.
Okay, thanks, and I look forward to listening to that, or hearing about it, or maybe reading about it in Velo News by you, or maybe on New Zealand Cyclist, or one of the many publications you write for, mate. You are a prolific writer, aren't you? But
otherwise, I'd be unemployed.
we won't labour on too much about the Australian Championships, but it'd be remiss of us if we didn't talk about the other two podium place getters. You know, Cam Meyer, he went off with Rowan Dennis in pursuit of Jack Bobridge, Rowan wasn't, you know, he didn't finish the race, as we said, but Cam still went off in a real hot pursuit. He got as close as 2 minutes and 40 seconds on the last lap, which was too far behind, but it was a great ride for Cam. He, it's his first race, for Dimension Data. He was a former Orica AIS, and it's interesting to note, before I go any further, Orica AIS had their worst ever performance in a national title, and both Bobridge and Cam Meyer are ex-Orica AIS riders, so there was a bit of a slap down there from a couple of their ex-teammates or former teammates. But Cam's performance was a brilliant ride, and also Pat Lane, you know, he got a bronze medal there, and you know, he had the guile and gumption to sort of go for that bronze, and that augured very well for his future, I think. But anyway, there were two great rides, and it really was a fabulous podium there, and it was a beautiful image of Cam finishing, and he was just finished being interviewed by television, and he the first thing he did was to go and embrace his former teammate Jack Bobridge, and that was a really great moment, and as we said, Pat Lane being up there too, there were three popular results. But I'd just like to say before we, because this sort of adds as a little segue, you know, Jack's going to be interesting, he's going to be an interesting player in the two down under. Pat Lane's going to be up there too in the Australia, in the Uni SA Australia team, and Cam Meyer, obviously a former winner of the Two Down Under, he's going to be racing there, and he's going to be in very good form. But as with Bobridge and Spratt, we had a chat with Cam Meyer on the finish line, so let's have a listen to what Cam had to say about his performance, and also he said some interesting things about Jack Bobridge's performance.
I don't think anyone feels very well after that. That was one of the most torturous national titles in that sort of heat. Strange race. Up and down, you could see it. It was like Richie Port lighting up a lap, Drapac lighting up a lap, but then it'd stop, and you had some machine out the front who just wouldn't let us bring him back. So I'm happy to be on the podium.
Were you always worried about Jack knowing what he's been up in the past?
Definitely. As soon as I heard the situation of that big group and Jack was in it, I mean, I'm thinking of 2011, I think, when he won. And I thought, they're giving a bit too much gap in the big teams of Orica and Green Edge and Avanti. I thought, that's a bit too big. You let Jack Bobridge like that, it's going to be a hard chase, and you could see it's too big to bring him back.
But Cam, when he's out on his own 90Ks from home, you must have thought,
he's going to blow at some point. Sometime his legs are going to give up, and I think it was only in that last lap, but all our legs were gone as well, so he thoroughly deserved it. I'm happy to be on the podium. I've been fourth here twice and a fifth, and I was part of Jack's win, part of my brother's win, Luke Durbridge's win, Simon Gerrans' win. I was like, geez, I just want to get on the podium. So for me to get on the podium means all the hard work I've done has shown, and I can go into the next races, Tour Down Under and that, and have another crack.
Did you feel that you came with a bit of a point to prove with your new team and all that, wanting to start with a bang?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I'd always gone well around here, but it was always the situation of being in a big team like Orica. So I wanted to start the season strong. Obviously, moving teams is a little bit of motivation, and you want to prove that it was a good choice. And I come out today and showed I got good legs, so it's a good start for me.
It's the first time Orica Green Edge haven't, I guess, dominated this race. They haven't had anyone on the podium. How much would this hurt that team? It just come from there.
I think it will. special. I mean, I'm sure they've got a lot of respect for how the race went and how Jack rode and myself and the situation, but I think they let it out of control at the start, and that's what they'll be sorry for, that they didn't have it more under control at the start. They gave Jack too much leeway, and in the end it was costly, and they didn't have the numbers in the end.
And on that last lap, you made some, you know, quite good inroads into Jack's lead there.
Yeah.
On the last climb, did you actually feel that there was a chance you could
build it, or was... He was blowing, but I would need to be going 60k an hour to get him. I think he had 3 minutes, and that's just a bit too much. So maybe if we kept going another two laps, which I wouldn't enjoy, I think he was just too far.
So you were more focused on just making sure you've got your lead in the silver medal.
Yeah, I was. They kept telling me I was 3 minutes, 4 minutes to Jack, and I was going, I don't want to know about Jack. I'm probably not going to get him, so I want to know what's behind. Is Gero coming? Who's coming? So the whole time in the back of my mind, I was like, just keep going and try and get the silver medal and be on the podium.
Just a quick word about your program now, the next races and the early part of the season.
Yep. So Tour Down Under next. That'll be good to ride with seven teammates. I've rode with Hassie and Renshaw today for the first time, but meet a few of the new guys, and then on to Cadell's race. So quite big Aussie summer, and then step over to Europe and get into the World Tour racing over there.
Thanks,
guys.
All the best, mate.
Thanks.
Slashed and torn.
pressure.
What a ride. That's the show you're listening to, and the people you're listening to speak are Rupert Guinness, myself, and Aaron S. Lee. Aaron, that's great, eh? We're just listening to Cam Meyer, who got second place in the Australian Men's Road Race Championship, his first race for Dimension Data, and it's a great return of form for him. I love listening to guys talk, and women, obviously, athletes talk straight after a race, like they do in cycling, triathlon, athletics, because you really sense that, you get the feel of that, you know, either elation or sometimes frustration, sometimes anger mixed in with fatigue, and they're trying to absorb the outcome and then, you know, having to analyse it and describe their emotions and their tactics before the media. And, you know, sometimes it's just great to hear people's instinct reaction, isn't it?
So it is, and that's some of the best parts of our job, isn't it? That we're able to live in that moment with them and to record it and chronicle it for the future.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and I think, you know, and obviously sometimes athletes will you know, may change their analysis after the case, but that's okay. I mean, part of sport is about experiencing it live, and, you know, and an athlete's always entitled to sort of reanalyze their performance and come back with some reflection later. But that's for another day. I think one of the things was interesting about Cam Meyer, and also for Jack Bobridge and Pat Lane, as we said, they're all three are going to be doing the Two Down Under. And one of the interesting points, you know, it's been discussed whether you know, in this summer of cycling in Australia, we've got Chris Froome, who's going to be doing the Herald Sun Tour, and he's going to be in Adelaide towards the end of the Tour Down Under on a training camp, but he's not racing it. Mark Cavendish, he's not going to be doing the Tour Down Under, but he's going to be doing the Cadel Evans Road Great Ocean Road Race just a week after the Tour Down Under. So it's raised the issue of whether this year's Tour Down Under field is lacking because it hasn't got any real marquee names. But there's a lot of conjecture as to whether a marquee name makes a great race. Isn't it the strength of the field and the depth of the field? Do you think, Aaron? What's your viewpoint on that?
Oh, absolutely. I've taken a quick look here at the start list now, and I'm telling you, I'm seeing a lot of things that interest me and that I'm excited about. I mean, for instance, we're looking just from Richie Port, Ryder Hegedal, Mark Renshaw, some guys, some familiar names to cycling fans around the world. They're all coming in with brand new teams. Australia's, we mentioned Cam Meyer. He's on a new team. We were talking, he's got a new teammate who's in Australia, who's coming over from Ryder Hegedal's old team, Cannondale, and now he's riding with Team Dimension Data, Nathan Haas. This is some exciting times. Of course, Ryder will be riding with Trek alongside Jack Bobridge, alongside Kel Regnan, the American rider that we talked about last week on the show. There's some exciting things here. Of course, the sprint field on the People's Choice Classic, and then obviously the final stage. I'm very excited to see Caleb Ewan mix it up. I'm excited to see Walter Whippet, the former Drab Pack rider from the Netherlands, who's now riding with Cannondale, along with his new teammate from New Zealand, former Avanti rider, Patrick Bevan, who won the men's time trial in New Zealand over the weekend. I'm excited about that. A personal favorite of mine that I'm tipping to perhaps upset a few, this especially on the sprint stages, Marco Kump, the Slovenian, who was riding with Adria Mobil, makes his return to the World Tour. He raced with Tinkoff Saxo a couple of years ago, but he's back, and he'll be riding with Lamprey Marina. He is a fantastic sprinter. Got a chance to see him up close and personal at the Tour of Qinghai Lake in July, and this guy has got the goods.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was a good cross-section of names there. I mean, like, I've just been writing down a list of GC contenders and sprinters, and, you know, just a few other names I'll just add to that, which may just, you know, heighten. And people who know they're cycling out there would know these names, but people who don't, trust us, these are big names in cycling. They may not be the Chris Froomes, you know, or the Mark Cavendish, but you only get those marquee names because of Mark key results and performances. But these guys are great riders, such as, if I can add to Aaron's list already, what about Simon Gerrans? You've mentioned that. Richie Port, Rowan Dennis, Jack Bobridge, we've spoken about him. Simon Clark, who's now racing for Cannondale.
Absolutely.
Sergio Haneo from Sky. Geraint Thomas, who's going to be possibly, read a story today, Chris Froome saying, you never know, me and Geraint could be co-leaders for the Tour de France this year.
Not that old chestnut.
Yeah. And the Colombian Jarlison Pantano, who's been training in Colombia with Orica Green Edge superstar in the making, Esteban Chavez. And Chavez reports that Pantano has been absolutely blitzing it in training. The Italian Domenico Pozzovivo, Spaniard Luis Leon Sanchez, Martin Velez, Diego Ulissi, who came third 3 years ago, Thomas de Gendt.
Yes.
Juan Jose Lobato, you know, and then looking at some of these other sprinters, Walter Whippets, Brenton Jones, give him a rap because he's been coming second behind Caleb so many times. It would be great to get a good result. Jose Joaquin Rojas from Movistar, they always come to the Tour Down Under with winning intent. Ben Swift, Adam Blythe, Stijl van Hoff, we've got to remember the Hofster, and as you said, Marco Kump. I mean, and Caleb. I mean, I reckon that's a cracker field, and I'm sure between the two of us, we've missed some names.
Oh, I'm sure we have. I mean, I'm excited to see Nathan Earle, see what he can do at Draft Pack. You mentioned Brenton Jones. You know, he takes that role that Walter Whippet had last year. Whippet, he won with Stage 6 last year. And that's a race that obviously Brenton is keenly suited for. And, of course, with a lead-out guy such as Graham Brown, he's going to Graham's going to put him right in the driver's seat. It'll be up to Brenton to finish that off. There's a lot of great riders there. You mentioned Diego Ulissi definitely should be on everyone's radar for GC, especially when it comes to the Tolwalunga Hill.
Yeah. I mean, I think out of those names, we did mention Geraint Thomas, but I mean, he's got proven form at this race, and it's a World Tour race, and that's what people got to remember too. It is a World Tour race, so there's points up for grabs, and with that, it's not just the points for the individuals and the teams, but it's also positioning of team cars for the next World Tour event. So if you win the Tour Down Under, you'll be number one car. You don't want to be number 18 car. So there's a lot to be gained in so many ways at a World Tour race. So, you know, people who are saying that, you know, the Tour Down Under's in trouble because of this, I don't think so. And I think the riders make a race, and I think they will make a great job of this race, and I'm really, really looking forward to it. You know, Aaron, I guess we could be talking all day about what's coming up and what's behind us. You know, I'm really excited for the next week. You know, we're going to touch base with you, obviously, for another episode of the show. It's going to be interesting, as always, to find out who's done what or not. What are your vibes right now when we're at this dawn of 2016, the cycling season?
Oh, I think this could be, it just seems to, it's got a feel to it, especially when you look at what Jack Bobridge did last weekend. It just has some sort of specialness, I think, some sort of feel to it this year that it's going to be a great season. And I think, as you just mentioned, Tour Down Under is truly one of the better races out there in terms of the athletes. It's the hotel simply located. It's great for the media. Also, the media center right there, one hotel all week long. And Adelaide really does show up to support the race. I'm excited. I think this could really set the tone for the rest of the year. Already talking to a lot of these athletes, as you have, prior to this race and prior to the season, everyone just seems to be ready for it. I think we've been out of business too long since the World Champs in September. I think it's time to get back into it.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think that teams are learning how to manage their roster better to be able to, you know, coming to Australia is a long trip, but they've learned how to come here. They travel here well, you know. They get looked after, and they appreciate that, and they know that now how to manage each rider's season for their good health, and also to get the optimal performances out of their riders, so they don't not over raced either. And I think you know, for that alone, the teams can come here with more confidence and a bit more sort of intent, rather than just, I remember the early Tour Down Unders, they would just roll around and, you know, try and use it as a training camp. You can't do that anymore. There's too much at stake. If you do, you earn race director Mike Turtis Ross. We've seen him in the early races. He would kick riders off the race and send them back economy. They'd come here business and they'd be sent back on economy. But that's maybe another story for another episode. Aaron, as always, mate, it's been great talking to you. Really look forward to chatting to you again. And as you said, I think it's going to be a fantastic season. And one last word, Aaron, before we sign off.
Well, I'd just like to say, look, have a great week down there. Obviously, some of our colleagues, it's a real showcase for everyone, especially the cycling scene there in Australia and down under. So just enjoy it. It's a great week to catch up with old friends, make a couple of new ones along the way, and obviously cover some of the world's absolute best cycling anywhere. And I'm a bit jealous right now, but I'm sure I'll do my best to get over it.
Well, we did say that the event is lacking some marquee names. You're one of them, Aaron S. Lee, but I reckon you'll be coming back, and I'm really looking forward to this race too. It's going to be my last gig for the Sydney Morning Herald after 9.1 months of fabulous time, 9 years and 1 month of the Herald. But we'll speak about that another day, another episode, but it's going to be a thrill. It's going to be a great week, and as we said, I'm sure by the end of it we'll be saying, what a ride. You're listening to Rupert Guinness and Aaron S. Lee. Thanks for listening to us. I hope you enjoyed this ride as much as we did. And look after yourself out there. Keep smiling. Enjoy what you do every day. And most importantly, stay safe. A metre matters. Just
heaven.